Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Matty A.
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of the Millionaire Mindcast. Oh, I'm excited for today's interview. This guy is a juggernaut. Mr. Ray Zinn, he's an inventor, he's an entrepreneur, and the longest serving CEO of a publicly traded company in Silicon Valley. He is a leader in many areas of life and business, and he's going to be dropping some great nuggets for us today. Welcome to the show, Ray.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here, Matt.
So where do we got you right now? I know you're obviously out in Silicon Valley. You've spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley, but it looks like you might be somewhere else enjoying some free time.
Well, we live in Montana, Helena, Montana. That's our permanent residence. We moved from Silicon Valley a couple of years ago, but I still have my home in Silicon Valley, actually in a city called Atherton, which is just around where Facebook and Google are. So we're in that general area near Stanford University, but I live there just part-time. I mainly live at my, ranch home in Helena, Montana. Beautiful. We have a large ranch here. It's 500 acres. And, so I just enjoy the outdoors and now that I'm not working full-time, even though I'm still working, but not full-time, I just enjoy doing more of the leisure kind of recreational kind of things.
That's awesome. Well, I'm excited to dig in a little bit on, you know, what your definition of a rich and fulfilling and wealthy life looks like today versus maybe what it looked like when you first started. But as you know, success leaves clues, and we're very honored to be able to tap into your millionaire mind and kind of what wealth means to you. And as we explore, you know, mindset and habits and transformational journeys of people like yourself, to better understand how we can apply some of those lessons to our own journey. I'm curious, you know, tell us a little bit more about who you are. At least take us back and give some context to Ray Zinn and how you got on the path that you've been on over the last, you know, 20, 30 years. And obviously, you know, you're talking about a 500 acre ranch and some secondary homes and all the fun stuff that you get to do today. Obviously, I'm guessing it probably didn't start out that way. So take us back a little bit.
Okay. So, if I go back to my aha moment, it was in 1971. I was visiting Singapore for the company I was working for. And I noticed how the people were surviving in Singapore without having government assistance. They managed to make a living. And I was just taken back by that. I thought that was so interesting as a young engineer that these people could make a living, provide for their families, and not have to actually work for another corporation. And so that was my big aha moment. So then in 1976, I had just completed inventing a piece of equipment called the wafer stepper for my company I was working for in Woodland Hills, California. And my boss asked to take me to lunch. And as we sat down, he's kind of a fatherly figure. And as we sat down and started talking, he says, "Let me just level with you." I said, "Okay, fine, let's level." And he says, "You really don't belong in a corporate environment. You really should work for yourself." So I was kind of taken back by that. Of what? What did I do wrong? You know, I mean, yeah. Where's the problem? You know, and so he just said, "You know, you're just too far out. You're thinking outside the box far too much." And because, you know, inventing the stepper was a big step forward for the company that I worked for. They were a small company. It was a big project. And it was having difficulty for them. And they just figured that I had taken them a little bit beyond where they could go, because the stepper really never became a viable piece of equipment until 1981, which was quite a few years after I'd actually pursued it, you know, in 1976 at that point.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor. Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process, and in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started.
So I went home, flew back to the Bay Area, walked up the stairs to park my car, walked up the stairs, and my wife met me at the top of the stairs, you know, with her open arms. And I said, I'm not going to work for anybody ever again. And she gave me a hug and a kiss. And she said, okay, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know, but it's not going to be working for somebody. So I started two or three different kinds of businesses. And finally, you know, I didn't have any idea what I was going to do. Honestly, Matt, I wasn't going to work for anybody. I was just going to work for myself.
Yep.
So in 78, I landed on the idea of starting a semiconductor company we call Micrel, which is the one I took public in 1994. So basically what you do is you form a company. And I got my guys together and said, okay, what are we going to do? We want to have a company. So what do? You know, and so wasn't we had a product, wasn't that we had an idea. It's just that we wanted to start a company. And so we sat around, thought about the ideas that we could build with this company. And I didn't want to be venture funded. I wanted to own the company. I didn't want anybody to be able to dictate what I do. So that meant I had to own it. And my partner, we had to own the company outright. So I took out a bank loan of $300,000 and put in our own money of $300,000. So it gave us $600,000, $300,000 working capital, and then $600,000, a $300,000 loan. And then we parlayed that into a company that I sold in 2015 for $839 million. That's a 2,500% return on investment.
Not too bad.
Not too bad, no. And at one point, we had over 1,000 people working for us. I never started out thinking I was going to be a millionaire, or I even wanted to be a millionaire. That wasn't my thinking. I just wanted to start a company and make it a place that people would like to work. So my goal is to make the workplace a little bit like home.
Mm.
For example, you know, you go from your kitchen to your bedroom, you know, to different parts of your home, depending upon what you want to do. So I said, why not make the company one of the rooms of the home, so that when you'd have to jump in your car to drive to your next bedroom or your next room in your home. We called that the home. So we went from our quarters, our living quarters, to our corporate headquarters, but we still call it home. You follow me, Matt?
Yeah, I got you.
So we just drove to our next room in the house, as you would. And so that's the way I ran the company. There's four pillars cultures that we had at the company. Honesty, integrity, dignity of every individual. In other words, we didn't allow any swearing or use a condescending language. And the last was do whatever it takes, no excuses. In other words, you can't make a mistake if you correct it. So a mistake is not a mistake if it's corrected. Would you agree?
I would totally agree.
Okay, so that's what we did. We said, okay, we all make errors. We have difficulties, but as long as we make it a don't care, as long as we fix it, then it's not a mistake, because we learn through trial and error.
Right.
And so while failure is not my buddy, as you would, I do fail, but I have to pick myself up and move on, providing I don't injure people in the process. So that's the fourth pillar, which is do whatever it takes, no excuses. So that you can see those are the four pillars of the company. We wanted to have a company where there was no swearing, no yelling, no screaming, you know, just a safe place for people to work. Now, most people, when they are at home, they don't swear. They don't use condescending language. You try to be a good person to your wife and your children, and you want to nurture them. So that's what I did as I ran the company. I wanted to nurture the people that work for me. And our turnover was the lowest in the industry. You know, our industry average turnover is 15%. Our company had 7%. Wow. So that's half of the turnover of a regular company. And in addition, half of our employees returned. They quit. They came back. We call them boomerang employees. So we only lost maybe 3% if you figure that we also got half of them back.
They realized the grass wasn't greener on the other side, and Mr. Zinn created a space they want to come back to.
Exactly. See, in fact, those are the words they actually used. The grass was not greener, and they want to come back where it was green.
It's amazing. Well, it sounds like you had some great mentors along the way that kind of lended the belief in you that maybe you didn't have at the time to say, hey, Ray, get out there, man. Like, you got what it takes, brother. You're not supposed to be in this little box. And I think that's what a lot of our listeners feel, is they're not meant to be in that box, and they feel called to get out there. And as you know better than anybody, you know, bootstrapping and starting a company and then being able to take it public and exit where you guys exited at, I mean, is astounding. Culture being a big, obviously, foundational pillar for what it seems like created an ecosystem that was, you know, uncomparable to what many businesses struggle with nowadays. And obviously, having the right leaders at the helm is a big piece as well. How were you, as this company evolved, right, and as your business and your life continued to evolve, how are you continuing to level up your leadership and put yourself in the positions to grow and 2.0 your mindset and your habits and your disciplines along the way?
Well, I wrote that book, Tough Things First, by McGraw-Hill. They published it for me in 2015. And Tough Things First is really the hallmark of kind of who I am. In fact, when I wrote the book, let me back up a little bit. I had so many people over the years tell me, you need to write a book about the story of your entrepreneurship. And, you know, I put it off. And then finally I said, you know, I really need to write this book. So I started writing the book, and I said, well, what do we title it? So I got my staff together, my vice presidents. I said, here's the concept of the book. What do we call it? What's a good name for this book? And Dr. Lynn, one of my VPs, says, doing the tough things first. And I thought, oh, okay. Because that's kind of what it is. It's about doing the tough things first, or loving the things you hate. But we didn't want to title it doing the tough things. We just call it tough things first. So we shortened it a little bit to call it the tough things first. So discipline is the hallmark of the book. It's doing what you don't like doing and doing it well. Mm. That's what discipline is. And so that's what I instilled in my people, was discipline. And so it's, you know, they talk about eating the ugly frog first. Have you ever heard that term before, Matt?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what we do every day. Is we get up, we eat the ugly frog first, get that out of the way. If we can live by that mantra of doing the tough things first and getting those ugly tasks out of the way, your day goes by so much easier. Because you always like to do the things you have that are fun, that you're interested in. But if you have that tough thing that's lingering over your head, you're going to think about it all day long, and maybe you procrastinate it, put it off till tomorrow or whatever. But it's going to bother you, and it's going to detract from you. So if you do the tough things first, you will, in fact, increase your productivity 20%.
It's amazing. Most people, you know, we want to do the easy things first, and I'll get to that later. Don't worry about it. I'll get to it. So with all of the things that, you know, you learned over the course of your career, how vital was mentorship to you? Were you kind of paving your own path and doing your own thing, or were you really surrounding yourself with people that elevated you and that you wanted to kind of learn and model after and modify to your own journey? What did mentorship look like during the course of your career?
Well, you know, it's the age old story. You know, you are who your friends are. So, you know, the birds of a feather flock together. Mm. So you want to surround yourself with people that have the same like mind that you do. People who have honesty and integrity as part of the hallmark of who they are, loyalty, you know, dedication, devotion. Those are the kinds of things that are important, were important to me. And I look for those kind of people because, you know, we tend, says a birds of a feather flock together, we tend to migrate toward each other.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's, I surrounded myself with those kinds of people and they kept me bolstered up. You know, I have a picture in my home. It's called, it's difficult being the top banana. It's a painting, of a pencil painting of a bunch of bananas that are all stacked on top of each other. And the person at the top is kind of wiggling and tipping, towing and around. And the people at the bottom are moving around to kind of, you know, support them. And the title is, it's a struggle to be the top banana. And so I, you know, think of myself as being that top banana, but all these people are holding me up and supporting me and keeping me from falling. And so that's the key for having a successful business, is surrounding yourself with like-minded people. Now they say, oh, you know, we have to have controversy. We have to, you know, if everybody were the same. Well, sure, you want to have some differences, but not controversy. Okay, you don't want controversy. You want harmony. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, while you don't necessarily have to agree and be exactly alike, you know, you want to have harmony. And I think that's one of the problems that we're lacking in the country right now, is we lack harmony. Would you agree?
Oh, big time.
Okay. So, you know, at my Krell, I strived for harmony. That meant I had to do a lot of compromising. You know, that's how you get through life. In fact, marriage, I've been married 58 years and, you know, I wouldn't be married 58 years if it weren't for the fact that I compromise. I can't have it all my way. You know, it's not my way or the highway. It's our way or the highway. You see, there's no I in team, as they say. So, you know, it can't be about me. And I always downplayed myself, you know, as being the chief. I'd invite the janitor in to talk to me. I mean, literally, he would come. His name is Francisco, and he would just come in and he would chat. We speak Spanish together, and we just chat. So to me, you know, I'd pick a piece of paper up off the floor, or I'll flush the toilets if they're not flushed. Or I just showed that I'm no different than anybody else.
Sounds like character is a big part of your leadership, and having the right character and surrounding yourself with people of like character, right? Because I think of, you know, a lot of there's a lot of great companies out there with great ideas that don't ever get anywhere. Because like you said, there's no harmony or there's no synergy or the core values and character are misaligned, almost like a car, right? It's like if one tire is out of alignment, the ride isn't as smooth. It's a little bit bumpy. You're not going to go as fast as you want to go, where you're trying to go. So how did you continue to attract the right people? I know hiring is a big challenge for a lot of people, and attracting the right people, the difference between a good hire versus a bad hire. It sounds like, you know, obviously you may have had some failures along the way, but you did really good at surrounding yourself with the right people. What are some things that people can learn from your experiences in attracting the right talent into their world, into their organization?
Matt, you really impressed me. That's a perfect, perfect segue. And you're reading my mind because I wanted to get to that topic. So what I tell people when they come in to interview with the company, I tell them straight off, I am not here to make you rich. That's your job. You have to make yourself rich. I can't do that. What I will do, though, here's my promise. I will help you become a better father, a better husband, a better wife, a better person, a better citizen of the country. I will help you become a better person. How much is that worth to you? And of course, they all say that there, you can't put a value or a price
priceless.
On it. It's priceless. I said, so when you come to work for me, I will guarantee you that within 3 to 6 months, you will come to me and you will tell me that you are a better person. And that's true. I mean, I without question, all the people that have worked for me that I've interviewed directly and made that promise have come to me and said, yes, I have become a better person. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story. I was at a company party, and I had a gentleman come up to me and said, can I speak to you for a minute? And he was not an employee. So he was there with his wife and a couple of his children. And I said, sure. And I went over to the corner, and he said, I just want to thank you. He just grabbed my hand and just held it. He said, I want to thank you. You saved my marriage.
Wow.
And I said, well, who's your wife? And he told me, and I didn't know his wife. Okay. Because there's like 1,000 people that work for me. And I said, well, tell me how I saved your marriage. He says, well, my wife was not a good person. She was not easy to work with. She was not a good mother. And we were just talking about separating. And then she went to work for your company. And after a while, after being involved in the environment of your company, she changed. She totally changed. And he had tears in his eyes. He says, you saved my marriage by having that kind of environment that people change for the better.
It's absolutely amazing. And obviously you've cultivated that intentionally, but you also, it's one thing to, you know, say the message and be the messenger, but it's another thing to live the message and to create and cultivate the space that the message can be embodied in on a daily basis and to uphold that standard in your company. And that obviously started with you. So that's absolutely amazing. And you talked about something that I actually made a note here that I wanted to get to, because obviously, you know, Ray, you're a perfect example of what I like to call a whole life millionaire. And this is a perfect example of, you know, financial abundance is very important and, you know, creating that income and those investments and unlocking that freedom. But most importantly, you know, creating more wealth and richness in other pillars of your life that are equally as important. And you said something about your wife and you being married for 58 years. And that to me is more of an accomplishment than taking your business public. And many people would be like, you're crazy, man. But we all know how tough relationships can be. And, you know, I absolutely adore my wife and my two daughters. And those are the number one pillars in my life before anything else. And I'm curious, I want to know how you have continued to be a hard charger and this individual who, you know, climbed to the summit of success and the pinnacle of success that many people would say, and still made your wife, your queen, you know, your relationship a top priority and continue to grow and have it thrive and excel.
Well, that's a good question, because I think that's something your listeners would want to understand. I had one of my employees who had been dating this gal for quite a while, and her name was Deanne. And talking to this fellow, and I said, well, when are you going to marry her? And he said, well, I'm not sure what kind of wife she's going to make. And I said, you got it all wrong, Tim. You should worry what kind of a husband you're going to make, not what kind of wife she's going to make. So I've always worried about what kind of husband I am as opposed to what kind of wife my wife is. Mm. In other words, I looked at myself, not her, you see. And I tell my employees the same thing, that, you know, if you worry about you, I won't. Okay. So, you know, my wife worries about me. She meets me every day at the door to give me a hug and a kiss. She's always has my dinner ready, and she makes home heaven. And so, you know, I know what heaven's going to be like because I live in heaven. Mm. And so I don't have to worry about dying and going to heaven. I see it every day. And so I respect my wife. I have made a commitment since the day I married her that I'd never be alone with another woman except my children, my female children, of course, or relatives. But since I got married in 1961, and I have never been alone with another woman in 58 years. So I've always made sure that I've maintained the sanctity of our marriage. so that there was no compromise. I never had to worry, or she never had to worry about where my morals stood. And I tell her every day what a wonderful wife she is and how lucky I am. I tell her that every single day. And I don't say how lucky she is. I say how lucky I am. You know, I tell her when I finish dinner, I say, thank you for dinner or thank you for breakfast. And, you know, and thanks for ironing my clothes and thanks for helping me clean this house. And, you know, praise is all about a successful marriage. If you can praise your spouse every day, it'll be hard to have any animosity, because you praise and animosity don't fit together.
Yeah.
So I just praise her constantly. And I did my employees too. That was the other thing that I promoted at work was praise. You can never give enough praise.
Right.
Even if you don't like what they're doing, you still got to find things to praise them. You know, if we look for the good in people, we'll find it. If we look for the bad, we'll find that too. So it's like the rosebush. If you look at the stem, it's got thorns. You look at the blossom. You don't look at the thorns on the stem. Okay? And that's the same thing with people. All of us have thorns on our stem. All of us do.
Yeah.
And so what we want to do is we want to focus on the blossom. What is good about that employee, not what is bad, or what is good about my wife or my spouse, not what is bad. So we focus on the good.
What you appreciate appreciates, right?
Exactly. Perfect, Sid.
So with your relationship being, you know, a priority, obviously your business was a priority. How was your, you know, focus on your health, and how were you protecting, showing up as the best Ray on a consistent and daily basis, not only for obviously your family and your friends, but just for you?
Well, I get up at 5:30 in the morning and I exercise for an hour. Then I get cleaned up and go to work. I always dress one level higher than I have to.
Mm.
So there's no casual dress with me. Now, granted, I have my just a shirt on. I don't have my coat and tie on, because I figured this the podcast.
Hey, you're one step above me, man. So you're living, you're walking your talk.
Well, anyway, I always dress one level more than I have to. And I always want to make sure that my employees saw the best image of me that could be possibly made with all the, you know, the fugilities and frailties I have in mortality. And so I just didn't want to show off any of my impurities or any of my imperfections. They've never heard me swear. I've never used a foul word. They've never heard me shout at anybody. And they know is that when I see them, the way I greet everyone is, how can I help you? Mm. That's how I greet people. Even on the phone, how can I help you? And so when you started the podcast today, that was my thought when I talked to you, Matt, is how can I help you today? And that's what I'm trying to do. How can I help?
Beautiful. Well, I mean, based on all of the information and experiences and wisdom you have to share, that, like you said, some of this stuff is priceless. I mean, some of these things that are applied, I know for me, when I was 25 years old and I went to my first quote unquote millionaire mastermind group, and I was having some financial success, but I was really bankrupt in other areas of my life. And when I saw some other individuals who kind of opened up their wisdom, their experiences, their network and resources, and gave me access to that, that has been priceless for me becoming the man that I am today, and obviously still evolving along the way, but just giving me permission to explore what that really looks like for me when I consider myself a pretty resourceful guy, and yet it made me realize how many people who want more out of life and their health and their relationships, making more money, creating a great business, whatever it may be, but they just don't know where to start. They don't have access to it. So how can you help me? Man, you're doing it right here. You're helping all of these listeners right now listening to this podcast get some information that they may have not ever had access to that could completely set their life on fire or put them on a different path. And that's why I love these kind of conversations.
Well, let me tell you this too. A lot of entrepreneurs, or especially in Silicon Valley, believe they got to work 80 hours a week to be successful.
Yeah.
That is a falsehood. I always made sure that I did not work Saturday and Sunday. I only work 5 days a week, and I tried not to work more than 10 hours in a day. because I wanted to be with my family. I wanted them to see a father and not just a businessman. So you don't have to work 7 days a week. 5 days a week is plenty. If you have to work more than 10 hours a day, there's something wrong in the way that you're running your life or your company.
Mm.
And so I think I average probably 48, 50 hours a week, which is all more than obviously 8 hours a day. But I made sure that I did not bring my work home. I never brought my work home. Maybe I took some phone calls from time to time on some issues because as a CEO, you're available 24/7, but I didn't try to bring it home. If it happens, I'll take care of it, but I don't encourage it. I don't make it a habit. I don't read my emails. I don't get on, you know, Instagram or any of those social media. I average probably, including use of my cell phone, I probably average an hour a day on the phone or, you know, on my device, I should say, which includes a computer, total an hour. And so I try not to get myself too caught up in the world, as you would, and going the way of the world. So, you know, it's a matter of managing your time in a very appropriate way and not letting your work become your life. My family is my life, not my work.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, go ahead, finish your thought.
Well, so I wrote this book. It's called Zen of Zen, Z-E-N of Z-I-N-N. And I did it because, again, I wrote a lot of musings and tips for people. And they said, boy, include those in a book. So it takes about 500 of these musings or tips to write in a book. And so if you think about that, that's more than King Solomon wrote. And so I've already written, you know, it's roughly a 200-page book of musings called Zen of Zen. It's available, you know, through Amazon. And I'm writing my second one, which means by the time I'm done, I'll have written over 1,000 sayings or musings and thoughts for you to read each day. You pick one, just flip open the book. Whoops, knocked over my microphone. You flip open the book, you just put your finger on one and say, I'm going to do this today, and I'm going to make this one tomorrow. And these are goals that you can have, that you can hang on your cabinet or your computer to remind you to do these things. And I would challenge you, Matt, to read Zen of Zen, and then you'll get a real good idea of who I am.
Love it. Well, I'm already getting a pretty good introduction here, and I'm liking what I hear, Ray. And we'll be sure for all those listeners right now that want to check out Zen of Zen or Tough Things First, we'll be sure to include those links in the show notes for you guys to go check that out and get a little bit more of an insight into Ray's brilliant mind. Ray, as we start kind of coming into what I like to call the rich and fulfilling life to get a little bit more insight into your mindset, and thank you so much for sharing your journey. I'm real curious real quick before we jump into that, based on you've seen, right, the world change a lot, especially in business, in technology, being in the, you know, the mecca of, you know, technological transformation. I'm curious what you think, maybe not what you think, I'm curious to know what you believe entrepreneurs and individuals should be keeping an eye on or staying aware of to position themselves in front of these changes? Or is it just these are tried true principles that will always stay the same and have stayed the same no matter what has come into the landscape or exited the landscape as business owners?
So don't get too engrossed in social media. I know we're on social media now, but don't let that become your life. And don't, what we talk about, what is truth? You know, trying to think of the protagonist told Socrates that what truth is to him is different than what is truth to Socrates. And I don't believe that's what truth is. Truth is not individual. It's universal. Now, I think what protagonist meant was, is what's good for him maybe not good for Socrates and vice versa. Mm-hmm. That's different than what truth is. Truth is inevitable. I mean, truth is
truth.
Law.
Yeah.
Truth is fact. Okay. So, you know, don't just take anything you hear as truth, because we hear so much fake stuff that's being thrown out because of the political ramifications of it that we tend to accept because it comes through the news media or through social media that it's true. You know what? I'll tell you what you can do, Matt, is listen to your gut. Your gut will tell you if something's right. Okay, ponder it first before we often speak too fast. We often react too quickly. Think it through. Slow down. Get your facts together. Make sure that what you're doing, you're operating on truth, not operating on information. There's a big difference between information and truth. And so as you run your company, as you get involved with your family, don't be so quick to react. Slow down. Take time. Make sure that what you're, the decisions you make are consistent with truth. And so it's a matter, I think, in this environment that we're in, that we're truthful, that we rely on things that are true, not on things that are just out there, as you would.
Yeah, and that's hard to. There's a lot of facade out there. There's a lot of, you know, I call them the false prophets, right? People that are putting out a lot of information that is not accurate, that is not true, that they haven't lived, they haven't experienced. Maybe they're shepherding information from one party to the next without doing their fact checking, right? And that impacts, it has a ripple effect on a lot of people. I've been, you know, someone who's been impacted by that stuff. We all have, right? If you've watched TV, if you've listened to the radio, if you've listened to a podcast, if you've been on social media, right? We've all been impacted that. So that was brilliant, being that we are so quick to respond nowadays with how fast the world moves. We feel like we have to do that. So it's a great reminder to stop, pause, reflect, then respond. There's some powerful stuff in there. And one of my favorite quotes from a book by Susan Scott is, don't listen to your gut, obey your gut, right?
Okay. I meant that, you know.
Yeah.
I agree. You're okay. Obey your gut. Okay.
Right. You know, that's what I'm saying. You mentioned it, right? That's a beautiful thing to, we sometimes we listen to our gut, but then we go against it, right? Where it's like, you said it, truth, obey, right? That's law. Like, just follow through with it. And your gut is a lot smarter than sometimes our brain or our hearts are.
Well, let me give you another example. You know, when we drive, you know, we come up, we see there's a stoplight. Okay. We call it a stoplight as opposed to being a green light, right? We call it a stoplight. Mm-hmm. And so when the light is green, what's the next one we see?
Yellow.
Yellow is a warning. That says that we're coming up against a stop. Don't go from green to red. Go from green to yellow and then to red. And there's a time period with that. You know, we know the light's going to be green for a period of time. Then it's going to go yellow for a period of time. Then it goes red. Think about reacting to things that same way. We don't go from green to red. We go from green, yellow to red.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
And then don't come off red until you see the light turn green. Otherwise, you're going to have a wreck.
Yeah, right.
So anyway.
That's a great analogy. I love that. That's something that we can apply in either business and life and any really a pillar of our journey and where we're moving and how we're doing. And I'm curious in regards to, let's talk a little bit about some, you know, everybody's got a different definition of what wealth and what riches mean to them, right? And what a rich and fulfilling life looks like. And I want to get an idea of kind of your perspective and your mindset and how some people can tap into the way Ray thinks. Now, I know you've got many millions of dollars and a lot of wealth. And if I were to give you $1 million right now and say, you got to invest it, what would you do with it and why?
Okay, it depends upon where your priorities are. You know, when I was starting my company, I made sure that my family had enough to send their kids on to college. So I set up even this is in the very beginning when I first started the company, I set up a plan so that my children were able to have their children go to college. And also my children could go to college. So, and then ultimately be able to buy a home. So I didn't focus on an airplane or a boat or a, you know, a fancy home. I focused more on what, because my children are my progeny. And, you know, what, how they turn out reflects on how I am as a father and a parent. So I focus more on my family with regard to my wealth distribution. I really didn't look at myself. I live way below my means, way below my means. I still fly commercial airlines. I don't fly private because I think of all the money that difference in cost I could just give to charity or could give to my family. And it, for that small amount of time I have to sit waiting for TCA or that I gotta sit between between flights is a small amount relative to the cost. So even though I have the money, I don't spend it. Just because you have $1 million doesn't mean you have to spend it. Don't let it burn a hole in your pocket. Okay. The money, the wealth that you have is not for yourself. You're only a steward of that money. It's called stewardship, not steward, stewardship. It's how do you distribute the wealth that you have. And if it's for you, you're doing it wrong. You know, you're given that wealth to help others. And that's the main goal. Look around, stop, look around, say, how can I help someone else? You know, I remember a story of a friend of mine who was in line at Target buying a doll for his granddaughter. And the person behind him reached over and handed the cashier his credit card saying, I'm paying for this birthday gift for this man. And my friend did not even know who this individual was. But he just did say, I'm going to help this person. And that's what that man did. And you know, when my wife was going through the cashier at our grocery store, that it's local to where we are, the person, after he rang up her bill and was packaging the goods, said to her, thank you for smiling. And just that he was so, it made him feel so good because he sees all the grouchy people.
Right.
And just her smiling made him feel so good. Smile and the world smiles with you. You know, it's not about how much money you have or what you've accumulated. It's what can you do with that wealth? So it's really how are you going to give back, Matt? What are you going to do? Are you going to just hoard it for yourself like Scrooge? We know the story of Scrooge, right?
Yep.
You know, we know the story, Christmas story. And we know that his heart was changed once he looked at the past and the future of his life the way he was going. And so, you know, then he would help out Tiny Tim and his family. And so, you know, that's what the real Cinderella stories are about, aren't they? It's yeah. Not what you get for yourself. It's what can you do for others? How can I help? What can I do to help you?
I love what,
there's where you're going to get your happiness. Yeah. Your happiness is not from your wealth. Your happiness is how you use your wealth.
Yep. Making your money matter and using it for a difference. And I love that you said, you know, charity. That was one of the things I always love to get insight from people that obviously have created great financial success, but many of them, pretty much all of them, you know, tithe in some capacity or another. In a lot of people who are kind of starting to accumulate and build wealth, right? Maybe sometimes there's still some scarcity there. What's your recommendation for people when it comes to tithing? Is it a certain percentage of your income, you know, the give to income ratio? Is it a, you know, a certain amount of time maybe that you can donate? What do you recommend for people as they're starting to get some momentum behind themselves financially, but still making contribution and charity a pillar of their kind of formula for success and fulfillment?
Well, a tithe is 10%.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a 10% is the minimum, not the maximum. The government allows you to go up to 30%, up even up times up 50% to give to charitable opportunities. So, you know, if you're not giving 10%, you're just doing the bare minimum. And that shouldn't be just your wealth. It should be your time. Mm. Giving back to the community, giving back to society. Okay. Not just spending money, going down and shopping. You know, the most happiness you're going to get is when you give of yourself, of your own time. So tithing money is 10%, or at least 10%, mm-hmm. but also your time. You know, donate some of your time. That's worth more than your money.
Yeah.
You know, we help out in a program I have called Zen Starter, which is our kind of like a shark tank for universities. I tell them, you know, it's really about giving back. You know, it's spending that time with the students and helping them learn how to become entrepreneurs themselves. And so I get more happiness and joy out of seeing the smile on these students' faces as I give them a little bit of money to help them with their entrepreneurial projects. And that's what that's my reward, is that smile, that thank you letter that I get.
It makes I wrote down your quote because I just think it's a great one. Is the world, thank you for smiling. You smile and the world smiles with you. I think that is such, you know, a powerful thing, that there's a lot of grumpy people in the world, right? That just don't find a lot of joy and happiness in what they do. And, you know, I think part of obviously enjoying your journey along the way, instead of kicking the can down the road all the time, is creating joy and having fun. I actually have a joy list where if I'm having kind of a grumpy day, I go to my joy list and I actually have a bunch of things that bring me joy, whether it's just having a cup of coffee and sitting outside, or it's, you know, going on a hike with my dog, or it's playing Barbies with my daughter, whatever the heck, you know, it is. I think it's important to bring that joy and also to have things to look forward to. And one of the questions I always like to know is, you know, people's bucket lists, you know, their adventures and the things that they want to make sure that they are, you know, enjoying throughout life. And I'm curious, what are, you know, if you were given 2 weeks to live, what would be one or two bucket list items that you would want to check off?
I'd finish my second book, my third book. Okay. So writing a book to help people is on my bucket list. And so I've done two, I'm on my third one. So that's on my bucket list. Somebody asked me, on a podcast that I did this morning, would I take the first flight with Charles Branson?
Richard Branson. Branson.
Yeah, would I take that first launch into space? And I'd say no. That's not the way I want to spend my time or my money.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't get thrills out of thrill rides. Mm. And so I look at life as you can either make it a thrill ride. Remember the story of Pinocchio. You know, what is his companions want him to do? Go to a carnival, enjoy life, ride the carnival, ride the wheel, ride, you know, remember he's eating all those ice cream cones and suckers and stuff. That's not what life's about. I mean, that's what those bad companions would have you think. So going to Disneyland or, you know, doing some of those things are not what I consider fun. Maybe there's some pleasure or joy you can get if you take your grandkids with you. But for yourself, that's not on my bucket list. touring the world is not on my bucket list. Hmm. What I like to do is learn languages. I speak about 7 or 8 languages.
Wow.
I like to be able to converse with people in their own language. And so I've learned to do that. I've learned to communicate with people in different languages. So that's on my bucket list, is be able to communicate in almost every language that we have, be able to at least say hello and how are you and their language, because that shows respect for them. So that's a thing on my bucket list. Another one is to write a church hymn for my church, you know, come up with a hymn that I've written. And so that's another one that I would like to do, because that's everlasting.
Yeah. You know? Well, it sounds like your bucket list is not about self-serving. It's about service and adding value to other people.
Precisely. And that's what this podcast is all about, isn't it?
You said it, man. You said it 100%. So as we wrap up with the final two questions that I want to ask you, is what's been the number one habit or discipline? You talked about discipline, right? And I believe, you know, for me, discipline is so hard, but discipline equals freedom. And when you really get into embracing the discipline, as painful it can be, the result that it gets you is much more rewarding and gives you confidence to push through that pain and those fears maybe that come along with it sometimes. So what's been your number one habit or discipline that's allowed you to really achieve the results in life that you wanted to achieve?
It's back to eating that ugly frog first. So What I do is I try to find out, what do I not want to do? What, it's loving the things you hate. Can you imagine that? Loving the things you hate. That sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it?
It does, man.
But there's very few things that I don't like to do, because I've learned to love them. Even though they're terrible, horrible, difficult things, I learned to love them. Because to me, learning to love everything, even pain and adversity, is a hallmark of a whole person. Loving adversity. Think about that, Matt. Learning to love the challenges that life throws at you.
Embrace the struggle.
Learning to love. I lost my eyesight in 94, but learning to love that, learning to love with dealing with that adversity, was so fulfilling for me. It changed a lot of things I had to do, but it made me a better person, because I learned to accept adversity. Adversity is like manure. It stinks, but it helps us grow. And so, you know, you know, the clouds of adversity are ever with us. But like a storm, it soon will pass. But storms also have their value, because they provide moisture that we need. Adversity also brings value, because it helps us deal with the challenges of the vicissitudes of mortality, by virtue of being able to deal with the tough things of this life.
Yeah.
Okay. And so back to the smiling, and the world smiles with you. I have a friend, 86-year-old friend, who came down with pancreatic cancer. And I talked to him for an hour. And he knows he's going to die. He probably will not live more than a week from now. But he said to me, and this is very telling, I want to leave mortality knowing that I hold no malice toward any man. So I want to straighten out any difficulties or challenges or malice that I have toward anyone. I want to straighten them out before I leave. You know, it wasn't that he wanted to go on some space ride or wanted to do some last fun thing. He wanted to make sure he was straight with his fellow man, that he had cleared his heart, that he could leave mortality with that peace, knowing that he holds no malice toward anyone.
Wow.
And so, and here's a person who's only got a week to live. You said, Ray, if you only had 24 hours, what would you do? Or 2 weeks or whatever. I think you said 2 weeks. What would you do? And I'd be the same as Doug. I'd like to leave mortality knowing that I had no malice toward anyone. Love your enemies. Love those who despitefully use you. That's what I want. I'm trying to see the good in everybody, no matter how difficult it may be. I want to be able to say, I know you must be a great father and a great wife and a great mother or whatever, you know, as opposed to, man, you're such an awful person.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I want to try to see the good in people.
Man, those are some powerful words right there. And I think it's a perfect way to segue into our final question, which is, you know, what is your challenge to, let's say, the person who's listening to your words come through their speaker, their earbuds right now, or just to anybody that you get to impact on this planet? What's your challenge to these individuals for them to maybe live their biggest and their best life, their most rich life, or, you know, to have the greatest impact that they can have while they're here on this planet?
Okay, I'm going to quote Walter Emerson. That which you persist in doing doesn't become easier. It's that the nature, not that the nature of the task has changed, but your ability to perform it becomes easier. That's the key. That which you persist in doing becomes easier. Not because the nature of the task changes, but your ability to do it becomes better. So, you know, just like those pro athletes, they didn't become good by just relying on their genetics. They practice and practice and practice. And so that which you persist in doing becomes easier. So, you know, persist in like a little train that could, you know, don't give up. Even though people around you are laughing, like the big train, the locomotives were laughing at the little train who was trying to pull that load. He says, I think I can, I think I can. Then he got to the top of the grade. He says, I know I can. And so don't try, do it. Don't try, just do it.
Oh, I think that's an amazing way to cap off this amazing interview. And for those that want to learn more about what Ray is up to, and we'll definitely be keeping an eye out for your third book, Ray, because I know you're going to drop some gems in there. And if you want to check out his two books, be sure to check those links out in the show notes as well. And Ray, I just want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. And I know how much you value and cherish your time, and we appreciate it so much here at the Millionaire Mindcast and our listeners and audience members. So be sure to, you know, send out a question or tag Ray or send a quote on your social media to continue to spread some of the amazing messages that he shared today, make an impact on somebody else's life, on somebody else's journey, and apply those most importantly into your own journey. So I just want to thank you so much again. And for all those that are listening, keep investing in yourself, keep investing in your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers. Thanks, Ray.
I'd encourage people to listen to my podcast, Tough Things First. You can go to my website, toughthingsfirst.com, and I produce one podcast a week also.
Well, there we go. We'll be sure to link that up in the show notes as well, and you can get Ray on a daily or a weekly basis. How about that?
Yeah. There you go. Go for it.
There we go. Thanks again, Ray.
Well, that does it for today's interview. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as I enjoyed having it, I invite you to tag a friend, to share this interview with somebody, because we all know that it could be just one piece of information, one aha, one strategy, one tool or resource maybe that we talked about that could completely transform someone's life, your own life. And my invite to you is to take something that you learned today and implement it. It's one thing to learn and educate yourself. It's another thing to implement these things and take action on them, right? Because one little thing could completely transform the path that you're on. And that's what this show is all about. So with that being said, I invite you to like this interview, to comment on it, to tag a friend, to share it with somebody, because that is how we can continue to make a greater impact on others who don't necessarily have access to this information or maybe seeking it and don't necessarily know where to find it. So if you're not subscribed on YouTube, if you're not subscribed on iTunes, if you're not subscribed on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer to listen through, I invite you to subscribe. And one of the ways we continue to spread and share this amazing message with as many people as we possibly can, make this impact, is through you, is by getting out this free conversation. We're only as great as the people we get to share it with. So with that being said, if you leave a review and you help us connect with as many people as possible, let iTunes, let all these platforms know that this is quality content. I would be grateful and honored if you take 30 seconds to go ahead and do that. I also want to wrap up by giving a big thank you to our sponsor, the Rich Life Academy. That is a community of peers, of mentors, of coaches that are working with one another to increase their income, their impact, their influence in their respective lives and their respective businesses. Many people don't have access to this kind of information, this kind of support, this kind of accountability and goal setting. So if you want more information on how to increase your income, increase your impact, increase your influence within the Rich Life Academy, be sure to head over to therichlifeacademy.com. for more information, as well as getting more information on real estate investing training. We get a lot of questions on that of people going, I want to increase my wealth through this vehicle. 90% of millionaires become so through owning real estate. Therefore, this is a very interesting topic for many people, but they don't know where to start. So I host a free training each and every week, and you can sign up for that free training at go.sixfigureflipper.com/registration. That's the number six. So that's go.sixfigureflipper.com/registration. All the links that I just talked about will be in the show notes and in the show description. Until next time, remember, keep investing in yourself, keep investing in your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.